Ron Ananian.
I think the obligation of a repair shop isn't just to collect money. We're not there to collect money. We are, but we're not. We're there to fix cars, and we do that so we can collect money.
Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it.
The Car Doctor.
It supposedly runs a test sequence when you start it up, and it does not.
Well, you have to ground terminal 13 in the diagnostic connector link to get it to flash the lights.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I think I'm a very literal kind of guy. I think that's just the way it works with me. And, you know, I think to be successful in life, I think to be successful in auto repair, you really got to know yourself. You got to know who you are. Sometimes I think back to the 10th grade, and I was in the high school drama club with Mrs. Klinger. And we were doing a scene with four kids in an elevator and about how people react. And I think I've told you this story, but it's been a while, so I'll rehash it for those that are new. And, you know, it was how you get on an elevator, how everybody tends to look away. Some look up, some look down, some sit there and count the floors. And she was looking for realism. Mrs. Klinger was just, she was, you know, she wanted realism. Show me what you got. Live the part. When the bell, it would ding, and, you know, the door pretended to open, and everybody got out of the elevator. Well, I got out of the elevator, and I took it literal. I got out of the elevator, and I took one step too far, and I fell off the stage. It happens, right? Thank God it was rehearsal. And I'm lying there, you know, on the ground, and everybody came running over. Mrs. Klinger came running over, and she looked at me, and she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, I think so. She said, "How many fingers am I holding up?" And I said, "3," and she said, "That's right." And she said, "You feel okay?" I said, "Yes." Yeah. She says, "Then get back up on stage and finish the job you started." She said, "You never stop and do anything halfway, and that's the way it is in life, and that's the way it is in the theater." And that's true, right? You never stop anything halfway. And if you're literal, you take that to heart. I had a 2005 Toyota Highlander come in the shop this week. I haven't seen Lou in 5 years, almost six, actually. And I'm not sure why or, you know, what kicks the bug where he ends up on my doorstep. I think I kind of know. I think it's a technical problem that nobody else can fix, and he's using me as the mash. He's using me as the drop-in, the guy that can fix anything, but he'll just, you know, he'll take it when he can. And it's interesting, right, because I see all kinds of shiny new parts on the car, and yet it's still not fixed, or is it? The vehicle stability control light was on. Now, vehicle stability control in 2005, it doesn't come on for a lot of reasons. And it rarely comes on, in my experience, without an ABS light or a track light or a check engine light. Usually it's a combination of things. So it was going to be an interesting repair. And I took it literally that way. It's going to be an interesting repair. I said, let's see where this goes. Scanned it for codes. It had a C as in Charlie, 1336. Yaw calibration is lost. In other words, there's a yaw sensor in a lot of vehicles. In 2005, yeah, we had it, you know, 16 years ago. Think of the technology, how it's, you think it's just recently. Nope, we've had it for a long time. Yaw is kind of like standing on a boat. The boat pitches up, the boat pitches down, it goes left, it goes right. They need to know that with regards to the car. Somehow this Toyota Highlander lost its zero point. It didn't know where steady C's were. And that usually happens as a result of A, somebody cleared codes because they worked on something and they cleared codes and sometimes it loses calibration, or B, the battery's disconnected, maybe improperly or for a long extended period of time, or C, maybe there's a fault in the yaw sensor or the wiring in the circuit leading up to it. Maybe. I think I've seen that once. I think one bad yaw sensor in 30 years of the possibility of the fault code being around across a multitude of vehicles. I had to correct for yaw sensor. I recalibrated it. 1, 2, 3, hooked up the Autel. The Autel went right through it, calibrated it, no problem, did the job it's supposed to do, which is what we love about Autel scan tools. And it worked. It just flat out worked. Told the customer, he says, "Hey, great." He says, "Can you inspect it for me too, by the way? It's due for New Jersey State inspection." Uh-oh. This is where I got out of the elevator and I fell off the stage, because when I did your sensor calibration, part of the procedure was to disconnect the battery. They want to start from a zero point. Guess what happened when I disconnected the battery? All the monitors were gone. All the flags, the readiness tests weren't there. We had just fallen off the stage again. And I kind of sighed, and I thought about Mrs. Klinger, because I said, what would she tell me to do? 50 years later, I still remember that. Get back up on stage and keep going. So I started to run monitors. The issue is, this time of year, I notice on older cars, running monitors gets to be a little tedious. I don't know if it's the weather. It was very cold in New Jersey this week, as it is in other parts of the country. It averaged around 11 or 12 degrees some days. And to go out and start running CAT monitors and EVAP monitors, because those are the ones that seem to take the longest, seem to be the most difficult. They're the ones that are the most trying. It took 3 days of driving this car. I put 48 miles on this car to get monitors to run. And this is a procedure that usually I can knock the flags down in about, oh, I don't know, 5.5, 6 miles. It doesn't take a lot. But here's an older car with 150,000 miles on it. Everything isn't as perfect as it could be. It's a little kind of beat up around the edges. And it's not here for this. It's here for the VSC light that nobody could get to go out, nobody could figure out. I took the car home one night. I called up Lou and I said, I'm going to take the car home, as I do with so many customers' cars. And I always tell a customer when I'm taking the car, I want you to know the car is off the property, that I'm responsible for it, but I've got your car. And I got up early the next morning and I started driving the main highway, Route 17. And I did it in a way that I actually took the overdrive off so the car would warm up a little bit faster and run a little warmer, because I'd make the engine rev a little higher. And by the time I got to the shop, sure enough, I was back on the elevator. The door was open and the play was over, because all the flags had dropped. First the EVAP monitor ran and then the CAT monitor ran, which I have to tell you makes no sense to me. And I see this on a lot of older Toyotas. Toyotas seem to do things a little differently, like they do. They're a different kind of car company. Wasn't that Saturn? And usually CAT monitor runs first and then EVAP. Toyota, it seems like the older ones do it backwards. But regardless, I was able to get them all to go 48 miles later, finished the car, inspected it, and delivered it back to the customer. He was happy. I was happy. We moved on with the day. Some repairs just, you know, there's no way to account for that. There's no way to know that the customer is going to say, hey, can you inspect this? And I want you to think about that, because going forward, cars are not getting easier. They're going to get more complicated. I'm going to talk a little bit later on this hour or next hour. I want to talk about GM in the news, that GM claims they're going to be all electric by the year 2035. No internal combustion engines to sell vehicles like that, nothing. And I kind of find that hard to believe, because I don't know that we're ready for that technology. We can't fix the current technology. And by we, I mean me and other shops like me. We struggle at days, because the logic and the information just isn't there to provide us, to give us what we need to know. The dealer goes through the same thing. It isn't even a matter of us versus them. All of us trying to fix cars. My Ford Explorer locked up the radio heating control head again this past week. I dropped it off at the Ford dealer because it's under warranty, and it's... I thought I would know what was wrong with it. I found a bulletin that talked about a reflash, which I kind of found hard to believe, because they'd done one reflash and changed the hardware already. They did the reflash. Let's see what happens now. You know, it took them 3.5 days to do that, too, by the way. It doesn't happen overnight. Nothing's simple. Nothing's easy. And it seems like going forward in auto repair, we're all going to be standing in an elevator, and we're just going to have to look very carefully when we get out, to make sure we don't fall off the stage, because Mrs. Klinger probably isn't going to be there to help you get back up on it. Hello and welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I want to thank you for stopping by. I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your day and your weekend and talk to you about your automobile, whatever it might be. The phone number to get in here is 855-560-9900. That's the Car Doctor's phone number. I should point out that's 24-7, 855-560-9900. You can call, leave a message anytime, day or night. Executive producer, chief cook, and bottle washer Tom Ray will call you back. Yes, sir.
Oh, I just want to let you know, thanks to you, my wife thinks I'm a bigger idiot than I am, because I can just picture you falling off the stage, and I was rolling on the floor laughing.
Tom, I'm telling you, it was, and I remember the kids. Henry Darden was there. Ellen Torello was in the elevator. I don't remember the fourth kid, But I mean, everybody was in hysterics. I heard ding, and I just walked forward and doink, and there I was. I was
when your head hit the floor.
Yeah.
Did you dent the floor?
No, actually, I had to fix it afterwards. But you know, Tom, it's funny. The older you get, the more you think back to how you got here. Sometimes I think life is like that jar of sand, and you want to line up all the grains, and you figure out which grains of sand interconnected to get you where you are. I know how I got here. I know how I got interconnected. Boy, I'll tell you what, if they ever put me on the Tonight Show and they say, what's your life story? It's going to be about a six-hour show because I got stories that, holy cow, it'll take all night. Let me pull over and take the pause. I'm Ron Ananey in the Car Doctor. We're back to open the garage doors right after this. Don't go away.
What's more fun than listening to Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Terry in Iowa. Terry, welcome back. Where do we stand with this Toyota Camry?
Well, I'm not getting it to run. When I turn the key to the on position, I thought I should hear the pump prime for a couple seconds. But I was doing some reading and according to some of it, they say this is a non-priming pump, so I shouldn't hear anything. And I don't get voltage back there either. When
okay.
I crank the engine, then I get plenty of voltage back there, and the car will fire up for a couple seconds. The RPMs go up to about 3,000 and then quickly drop off and the car dies. If I try to redo that again right away, it'll just crank. It won't fire up like that.
Oh, okay, when it just cranks and doesn't fire up, do you have voltage back at the pump?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
Then you've got to be a fuel pump.
That's a fuel pump. Now, I want to ask you about one fuse. It's a 5-amp fuse, and it's called a multi-port fuel injection system fuse.
Okay.
And I was testing all the fuses in the relays, and when the key is in the on position, I don't get any power at that fuse. Does it have to be cranking in order to get that power to that fuse? Go through the switch first?
Try it.
Is there something else wrong?
Crank it. Do you have power to that fuse?
Well, I haven't had a helper to help me do that at
right.
the same time. So I'm
right.
Not sure.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, no. But the fact that, do this. Do you have an old headlight lying around, Terry? A big headlamp? You know, like an old round or square style headlamp?
No.
Okay.
But I have. I did try the headlights and stuff, and they
no, no, no. I'm not asking for that. I want to put an electrical load on the fuel pump circuit. You're working alone. I want to give you something visual. All right.
Okay.
Go buy the cheapest round old school headlamp you can find. All right.
Okay.
It's going to cost you $10 or less. It's not going to be a lot of money. Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts near you?
Yes.
Run down to the local O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tell them you're looking for a test headlamp. You're going to use it as a test light. All right? You're not looking for it to, you know, you don't need 10,000 candle power. You just need a headlight bulb. All right? Something,
okay.
You know, round, self-contained, like an old school car, like, you know, an early 70s Chevelle or Monte Carlo, something like that. An old round, I think it was a 6014 was the part number, but an old school round headlamp. They typically draw 7 to 9 amps. All right, on a 12-volt system. I want you to set up a set of test leads, find power and ground at the fuel pump connector, disconnect the connector, wire it to the headlight. Now when you turn the head, now when you go to start the car, turn the key on. Does the headlight light? Probably not. The fuel pump doesn't run. Crank the car. Does the headlight light? The headlight should light, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now create your condition where put it back together, create your condition where you can get the car to start and then it dies off after a short period of time. All right?
Okay.
Put the headlight back on it. Disconnect it, put the headlight on it. Does the headlight light? Because I want you to check, I just want to be sure for the price of a fuel pump, I want to be sure that the ground side can stand the electrical load. And that you have enough electrons, you have enough electricity back there to run the pump. If you can light that headlight and it glows as bright as it did when the car was running normal, then I've got to believe you've got power and ground. You plug that in. If the pump doesn't run, the fault has to be in the pump. We don't care about fuses. We don't care about anything else. Power and ground, it's got to run. There's no magic pill here.
if I disconnect the relay and bypass the relay and the pump runs, I can hear it run then. Is that doing the same thing as testing it with a light?
Well, you're proving the pump runs, but then now you're into it. Now you're looking at this entirely differently. Okay. What I'm trying to see is, okay, create your condition where the car doesn't start.
Okay.
Ground one side of the pump and run a 12 volt fused jumper wire to the other side. Does the pump run? Yes or no?
All right.
If the pump runs, it's not the pump. Then you don't have you have voltage, but you don't have ground. You just told me 2 minutes ago when you said the car died, I asked you, do you have power back there? You said yes.
Right.
So who cares what the relay is doing? Stop running yourself around in circles. Pick a direction, right?
All right.
Pick a direction. Let's go with it. It's a simple two-wire fuel pump. There's nothing crazy about this. It's not pulse width modulated. It's on-off. Do you have power and ground? And that's why I'm pointing out, you have power. Do you have a good ground? The best way I know to check for ground on anything electrical, the easiest way for a do-it-yourselfer, wire in a big old-school headlamp. If it lights a headlamp, that circuit's got power and ground. That component has to run. If that component doesn't run, it's bad. Or there's a break between the socket and the component. Make sense?
Yeah, I'll give that a try.
Now, if you can't get the headlight to light, that's a horse of another color. Now, if you can't get the headlight to light, what's the first thing you're going to do?
Check for power.
Right. And if you have power and the headlight still doesn't light, where's your problem?
Probably a ground.
Right. You see how we just took that circuit apart for a $10 headlamp?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So
I'll give that a try.
Let's go do those things. Get over to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. You can find them online at O'ReillyAuto.com. They'll be glad to help you out. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just a basic, you know, old school headlight. And you'll be amazed. Wait till you have a bad blower motor in a car and you're looking for a way to prove is it the blower motor? Is it the circuit? Is it the switch? You want to try something fun if you like working on cars. Take an old school headlamp, hook it up to the blower motor circuit, put it on low. The light glows dim. Put it on second speed. The light grows brighter. Put it on third speed. The light grows even brighter. Put it on high. The light glows as bright as it's supposed to when it's on the car driving down the road. Why? Because you're just proving the switch, the variable resistor, the circuit, the wiring, the connector is all good. If the blower motor doesn't work, it's a bad blower. It's that simple.
Well, I hope it sounds simple. I hope it is.
It is. So just don't overthink it. All right, kiddo? I'm here next week. You know where to find me. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Terry. Good luck. Yeah, we can't make things complicated, folks. It's just, you know, get back to basics. Just don't reach too far out. Listen, I'm guilty of it too. Sometimes I don't see the simple stuff. I had a customer this week tell me I was talking to him about his oil change. His oil change was due in July, but he just hit the oil change mileage mark last week. And I said, Rich, why? And he said, but Ron, I didn't have the mileage on it. Yeah, but it's an either or. I said, you don't get to pick. Oh, time counts? You know what? Maybe I don't hit that point enough. Yeah, time counts. Got to look at both. Keep it simple. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. I'm coming back right after this. Don't go away. The Car Doctor, thanks for sticking around and being part of us this afternoon. You know, let's get on over and talk to Jim in Wisconsin, an O2 Chevy Trailblazer. Jim, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
You're very welcome.
Listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
We got an oil leak. There's not a lot of miles on a vehicle. It sat for a while. I'm noticing oil. I'm going through, when I run it heavy on the highway, a couple quarts, maybe every 800 miles, but the thing is, I'm kind of wondering if it's a valve cover gasket leak, or I'll tell you, I'll make it quick. I got underneath there, jacked it up. There's a power steering boot underneath there, and I squeezed that, and oil came out of there.
Okay. So you're seeing fluid drops on the ground, right, Jim?
Yes, sir.
So it's not, well, it, you know, I think you got two things going on here, all right?
Okay.
I think you've got an oil consumption issue, all right,
okay.
From the sounds of it. You went through how many quarts in 800 miles?
Probably two.
Two quarts. So you're burning oil.
Yeah.
So, you know, first things first, how many miles are on this car, this truck?
56,000.
Well, it's not a lot.
It was our original owner, but it sat for 2 years, but that's the only thing. The guy already replaced a lot of other stuff on it before I bought it.
Right, right. So we've got to know a couple of things here, and we've got to be concerned about a couple of things. First of all, do you have, you know, an oil consumption problem? Sounds like it. So let's fill it up to the right level. Let's make sure the level is right, and then let's drive it. Let's put 400 miles on it.
Okay.
You think you'll go through a quart in 400 miles?
Yeah.
Okay. So a quart in 400 miles should be an oil leak that by now the rear bumper is coated. It's weatherproofed. You don't have to worry about those tough Wisconsin winters because there's going to be oil underneath the undercarriage of the truck. So you've got a massive oil leak somewhere. If there isn't, now you've got a bigger problem because now it's burning it internally.
Right.
You know, this is sort of like there's bad news and there's worse news. You know, there's no good news here. If you don't see any oil leaks to that magnitude and it doesn't appear, you know, listen, I'm willing to accept, you know, seeping out of the corner of the valve covers. Heck, I'm willing to accept it's dripping on the exhaust manifold and making a little smell. A quart in 400 miles? You know how big a quart of oil is? Take a quart of water and knock it over in your garage and watch how far that water goes. You know, that's a lot of oil, brother. All right?
See, and it's spraying all over the turpentine belt and all over the engine and everything.
Well, is it? Are you seeing oil all over the inside of the engine compartment?
Yeah.
So then it sounds like you've got two problems. It sounds like you've got a power steering rack leak.
Okay.
And it sounds like you've got some kind of front engine cover, valve cover area leak. I mean, and listen, it could have more than one oil leak.
Right. The miles doesn't matter there, but that's a 2002, and that's the first one they came out with, and I bought it because the guy told me it was a 2004, and then I found out it was a 2002, but that's the first one the Blazer came out with. Does that matter or not really?
Not really. Listen, it doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter now. You own it. The check cleared. It's yours.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
You know? And now we've got to make you look good because your wife's going, you know, I told you not to buy that truck, right? Am I lying?
Yeah, because it was too damn old.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You know what? Mama's always right. If mama's not right, mama's not happy. And that's a whole other story.
And maybe now I got to... Shit. Okay, well, I'll do a little digging, and then I'll get back to you. And with the COVID, you guys are still doing the show every week, right?
Oh yeah, we're here every week. I don't have to see Tom anymore. We're on remote software out of the studio. Tom's somewhere in New York. I'm not quite sure where he is.
But, how's that going? You like that better or not?
I kind of miss it.
I like it because I don't have to look at Ron.
Well, I miss it. I miss it because there's nobody to kick me. But you know what? We kind of rocked and rolled and reacted to the COVID thing, and we're making it work. So you guys don't see half of what goes on around here. You had to be here Thursday night. We put two new computers in the studio and a new laptop and trying to get everything wired up before the show. It was kind of hysterical because we're working our way through some Windows 10 stuff. But
you're always here for us, right, Ron?
Absolutely.
No problem.
I'm not going anywhere, Jim. I'll be here for you until the Lord takes me.
Okay, be safe, man. Nice talking to you again.
You too. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Tom. Are we going to be here that long? Really? What if we want to go out to lunch?
Well, I think that's a different story.
You know,
there are delivery services like DoorDash, so we're all set.
You know, we could. Although I think we'll be at, well, that's a whole other conversation. By the way, do you think next hour, you know who I miss talking to?
Me.
Okay. Then I'll tell you the story later. So I'm not going to tell you now, but I have a job for you for next hour. So we'll see if you can pull it off. Let's go over to Brian in Maine and start that conversation. I don't know if we'll finish it before we go to break, but let's see what's going on here. Brian, welcome aboard, sir. Ron and Anian at your service.
How you doing?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Yeah. You know the make, model, the truck. 2019 Silverado.
Okay.
3/4 ton. It's got a vibration to it. Brought it back several times. They did the drive shaft, thought it was drivetrain. I think it still might be. 180 drive shaft, new drive shaft, new rear end, new tires. Thought it was corrected. Drove it back, still doing it. Not sure if it might be some front carrier bearing or what it might be, but it's kind of a little irritating that it does it. It's probably between 48 and 62 miles per hour.
Okay.
Very consistent.
All right. And when it's doing it, if you put the truck in neutral and coast, does the vibration go away?
No.
So it's still there?
No. So, it's still there.
So this is speed related, not drive load related.
I don't believe that it's drive load related.
Right.
Like I said, I've pretty much tried everything uphill, downhill, corners, certain different speeds, but it always goes right back to what's going on with it. And it's very light, almost like you were like the two parts of a bearing, like you get your outside part kind of spinning, not
right.
quite as fast as the center is spinning. I don't know where to go with it.
You know, they've got more than a few bulletins and preliminary information packets on vibration and all sorts of problems with those vehicles, where they talk about different things with wheels and bearings and calibrations. But I find it interesting that the dealer can experience this. They can feel this vibration. Do they agree with you, or are they just trying to appease you, do you think? They agree there's a vibration there.
Yeah, I think they have some good technicians there, and they did find some problems with the rear end. And they were pretty confident that was the fix, because there were some issues with it, but it still didn't fix it. I think they acknowledge that it's there, but there again, I think they want to, you know, there's only so much money and time they want to put into something like that, and they decide that it's within acceptable limits.
Well, okay, so here's the first answer to that. Here's the answer to the second part of your comment, all right? Is if they think it's within a production tolerance, then how about they show you another 2019 that does it?
Right.
Listen, I've got that truck. I own your truck. I've got a 2019 Silverado 2500 HD. Bought it new 2 years ago. I don't have that problem. I don't notice any vibration.
Nope.
And trust me, I'm the princess in the pea. I'd feel it through seven mattresses. All right? My truck rides steady at 60, at 70, at 75, at 40. It's I have no vibration issues. So I think the first thing is everybody has to get on the same page that, yes, there is a problem, because otherwise anything I tell you is going to be a waste of time. That's rule
right.
number one. So you know what? It's a simple request. Guys, you want me to go away? Get me another 2019. Let me take it for a ride. Let's go for a ride together with the technician. Let's both see that, yeah, this is what they do. And that's a fair comment, right? That's fair for you. That's
right.
fair for them, right? Okay.
Correct.
On the chance that yours does have a vibration, that it's a legit problem, and you're rolling along, let me clarify this, you're rolling along at 45, 50 miles an hour, you feel this vibration, you put it into neutral, and the vibration is still there, right?
Yep.
Okay. What if you drove it on a lift? What if you put this vehicle up in the air on a lift at 45 miles an hour? Sounds a little crazy, but we do. It's got to be mounted
right.
really secure. Do you feel the vibration? Would you feel the vibration? Would you be able to? There might be a lot of banging and clanging where things hanging that you can't duplicate it because of driveline angle, but it's worth a try. All right?
Right. Yep.
What I'm getting at is, do we have a bad rim that they just haven't encountered yet? Do we legitimately have a bad tire and rim? How are they balancing the tires? Are they using a standard balancer? Are they using something quality like a Hunter Road Force machine? Even though the Hunter Road Force machines, you know, what a Hunter Road Force machine does, you ever look at a wheel on a balancer, how when it rotates, it's got a little bit of a hop to it. There's always a high spot and a low spot. It kind of has that.
Right.
Right? So what a Hunter what a Hunter Road Force does is it compensates that little dip in the wheel to the dip in the tire so that it matches and it reduces the vibration. So let's go do that. Do those three things. Call me back. I want to hear how a truck just like mine has a vibration and it's normal. All right, kiddo?
Sounds good.
All right,
yeah,
bye.
I will. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome, sir. You let me know. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. Let's do some email. Hey, Ron, love the show. I've got a 2000 GMC Sierra 1500, 240,000 miles, runs great. On cold mornings below 30, yeah, that's cold, the trans will not shift until the engine temperature reaches 190. After that, it runs great all day. I had the transmission fluid exchange done. Thought that would help. No luck. Only in extreme temperatures I have the problem. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Frank. Kind of rhymes. From Pennsylvania. Any help appreciated. You know, Frank, the issue is when it's cold, the internal seals of a transmission, they're shrinking. Or in this case, they've shrunk. They're allowing fluid to bypass. And you've got internal issues inside the transmission. The only way, well, two ways. First way, which, you know, I don't like to be a Band-Aid mechanic in the sense of it's in a bottle that should fix it, but you could. There are products out there that will revitalize rubber seals and help them to swell to see if they will work again, even in the cold temperature. It's worth a try. You haven't got anything to lose. But at this point, the absolute right way to fix this, if you plan on keeping the vehicle, and while you can still get parts, it's 21 years old, would realistically be rebuild the trans. And you've got to look at the whole vehicle, though, before you go and do that. Just what kind of shape is the rest of the truck in? And the other thing to look at is price out a new truck. If you really need a pickup truck, this is probably the cheapest one you can afford right now, because a new pickup truck, they start at $45,000 and work their way up from there. So if it were $5,000 for a trans, fraction of the dollars, it's not it's a no-brainer. I would definitely consider that. It'd probably be the way to go. Another listener. Hey, Ron, I see that the oil from my Kia gets dirty a lot faster than the oil in my Toyota Matrix, non-GDI car. I wonder how you know that. I've heard that carbon can build up on the valves that let in air for combustion, and also the pistons building up carbon on the rings and not letting them move around in their slots on the pistons to ensure a tight seal in the jug. Is that right? And do you think it's prudent for an owner who can follow directions to get a product like Berryman's intake valve and combustion cleaner and use it? As long as I follow the instructions, could I damage anything, or is this better to go to a shop to do? Lee, let's back up here a second, okay? First of all, before we judge oil strictly by color, okay, let's take an oil sample from both vehicles. Let's run correct oil, correct viscosity, so forth. Let's take an oil for analysis, and let's send it out to the lab to get analyzed, and let's see what they come back and tell us. Are the oils the same? Are they meeting their requirements? Because this could be a condition of incorrect oils being used. Let's do that first, and then we'll talk about what sort of additives to put in here. Listen, I'm a fan of Berryman intake valve and combustion cleaner. No, there's nothing you can hurt. I think it's good normal maintenance for the vehicle. More information at berrymanproducts.com. But to think that that's going to solve an oil color or oil condition issue, I think that's a reach until we know more about the vehicle. Let's get an oil analysis done on both vehicles and come back with data. As we always say, math doesn't lie. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'm back right after this. Welcome back. Did you see the Times this week? It was in the New York Times. It was in the Detroit Bureau, Paul Eisenstein, a bunch of different places. The commentary about General Motors is going to go all electric by 2035. You know, it's funny. I was saying this morning to someone. I wonder how car companies think. And I know there's a reason. I know they've got their logic. I know they've got their thought process. And, you know, maybe they run business at a different level than me, but I just don't see it. I don't see how in 15 years, and, you know, just opinion, folks, I'm allowed to have that. I think I'm still allowed to have an opinion. I don't see how in 15 years we're going to be able to generate enough electricity to power an all-electric fleet. And, you know, it's interesting, right? You look at General Motors. General Motors is going to say they're going to be all-electric. Toyota hasn't said that, and Toyota is a bigger car company than GM. And, it's interesting. I saw Ford 2 years ago or a year ago, Ford gave up producing cars, right? We remember that. Ford came out with that stunning announcement they weren't going to produce cars anymore and that everything was going to be a truck. The only car Ford is going to make, I think, beginning this model year is going to be the Mustang. And they're going to move slowly into all electric vehicles as well. You know what Ford did? They gave the car business to Toyota because people are still going to want four-door sedans. And where are they going to buy it? Toyota, Lexus, right? Honda. The Japanese car companies, they think different. They really do. And, you look at the electric market. GM's saying we're going to go all electric. What if? What if we can't make the batteries? What if we don't have the technology? What if we don't have the infrastructure? Who's going to support it? I'm going to talk about this a lot more. I'm just wanted to kind of get your juices flowing, because you've got to ask yourself, you know, who's making these decisions? A thousand things I can think of why electric cars may not be the answer at this time, but we'll talk about it in the future. I'm Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor, reminding you, this time like every time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See you.